Dynamite was in Knoxville, Tennessee tonight, and apparently there was some really bad weather in the area, which unfortunately presented some travel issues for a lot of people. The Samoa Joe Nick Wayne match was one match that was scheduled for the show tonight. That match did not take place, but pretty much all of the key players, they made it to the show, so I don't think there were any significant changes, but there were changes that had to be made to the show. That was one of them. One match that went on as scheduled, and I am sure that the tag team champions, now former tag team champions, they wish they were stuck maybe on the tarmac somewhere and they couldn't make the show, but unfortunately for them, they did make it to the show, and that is Private Party. And I am here to tell you, party's over. We have new AEW World Tag Team Champions, and they are the Hurt Syndicate. Bobby Lashley, for the first time in his career, is a tag team champion. Shelton Benjamin, of course, no stranger to being a tag team champion in the past. But Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin, not only did they beat Private Party tonight, they laid a beatdown on these men, the likes of which we have not seen in quite some time. And just like that, the reign of Private Party has come to an end, and it's very clear now why they won those titles in the first place from the Young Bucks. They won them because they were always going to be transitional champions, and they transitioned those belts right off the Young Bucks, right into the hands of Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin. And it's a damn shame, because even though the Hurt Syndicate is super over right now, and I'm not even against the move, but Private Party, when you look back, they deserve better. And what they were handed was one title defense prior to tonight, one title defense since winning those titles in a match that didn't even take place on Dynamite. They had one on pay-per-view, and they had one on television. Never on this show did they defend the titles until tonight when they lost them. So they never stood a chance. And it sucks for them, but look, you can't deny that the Hurt Syndicate is super over right now. You listen to these people in Knoxville tonight, not only were they over, but Bobby Lashley in particular. These people loved Bobby Lashley. This has been the issue, and I don't say issue in a negative way, but this has been the issue with the Hurt Syndicate from day one. This has been the issue with Bobby Lashley going back to when we saw him last in WWE, when they tried to turn him and the Street Profits heel. They do not want to boo Bobby Lashley. So they went out there tonight, and they were treated like the conquering babyfaces. And Private Party now goes to the very bottom rung of the ladder, which is pretty much where they have spent the vast majority of their career in this company. So that was the big title change of the night. There could be another title change incoming if Jeff Jarrett gets his way. Because Double J was back on my television screen tonight to remind all of us that he is coming for Jon Moxley. As if we didn't already know this, he wants to make it very clear that he is coming for the AEW World Championship. And he took one step closer tonight to accomplishing that goal, a goal that I think you will fall short of, but one step closer to potentially being the world champion. We did, however, get our first tease for something I actually like and have an interest in, and I hope that they pursue this. It gave you a little hint that there could be something coming soon with MJF and Hangman Adam Page. See, that's something I can get behind. Just a little tease, but it looks like we may be headed in that direction very soon. And we have some more clarity now about the world title scene heading into Grand Slam. We have Grand Slam in Australia, which I talked about this on the podcast this weekend. This Australia show, in terms of the promotion for it, in terms of, you know, how and when and where it's going to air, the whole thing has been a complete embarrassment. I don't even think tonight, with all the mentions of Grand Slam, that they gave a time. I think they just mentioned the date and the fact that it's going to be on TNT and streaming on Max. At least last week, they said 8 p.m. At least one time that they put the graphic up tonight, I know the time was not on there. So I'm not even sure if they've worked out all the details as far as exactly when it's going to be airing. The whole situation has been a complete debacle. But we got a little bit more in the way of clarity tonight about who Jon Moxley is very likely going to be defending that title against, because they've been building to Jon Moxley and Adam Copeland. And I wasn't sure if they were going to do that match on February 15th, or if they were going to save that match for Revolution, which is not until, I believe, March 9th. The 5th or the 9th. I want to say March 9th. Well, based on what we saw at the end of the show tonight, it looks pretty clear to me that we're going to be getting Jon Moxley not defending his title against Adam Copeland at Grand Slam, but defending his title against Switchblade Jay White. He will be the buffer before Jon Moxley goes on to defend his championship against Cope at Revolution. So we're not even going to get that match probably for another month and a half. And based on what I saw in the main event tonight with Copeland and Pac, that's not a good thing. Because that was the one thing on the show that I really didn't like. I thought the main event was a bore. It pains me to say that about a Pac match, because he was in that ring bumping his ass off tonight in this main event. This show, I actually liked a lot of things on this show tonight. I didn't think it was a bad show. And then we got to the main event, and it just bored me to tears. So to me, that was the low point of the night. And of course, it was the low point of the night because it led into the angle then that followed with the Death Riders. And almost anything the Death Riders are doing these days is poison on this show. Absolute poison. And so I look at the world title picture as it currently exists, as it currently is unraveling on TV. And I don't mind Jay White getting a world championship, man. If they want to go back to Jay White, even though he was one of the men who was beaten in the four-way at World's End, you know, I like Jay White. You want to go back to him and do a title match? Fine. But who are the two people that they have been building and positioning as the next challengers, potential next challengers for Jon Moxley and the AEW World Championship on TV? Adam Copeland and Jeff Jarrett. And when Adam Copeland and Jeff Jarrett are your next challengers, Jay White notwithstanding, for your world championship, to me that's an indictment on this entire Death Riders angle. It's an indictment on the whole, just the whole creative as it relates to the championship and what they are doing with Jon Moxley right now. And you might be able to justify it if the Death Riders stuff was super hot right now. If it was just a white hot angle. There's nothing hot about the Death Riders. Nothing. It's cold. Cold as a cadaver. And when those are your two big challengers that you were promoting, something is seriously wrong. So it's no wonder that that was the low point of the show tonight. But like I said, there were other things on this show that I enjoyed outside of that. And we'll talk about what those things were, because this is your AEW Dynamite review. It is January 22nd, 2025. Dynamite tonight opened with Excalibur welcoming us. Taz was there and they threw it to Tony Schiavone, who was already standing in the ring for the opening face-off. And he introduced Will Ospreay, who made his way out to the ring first. Following Ospreay was Kenny Omega, who got his Battle Cry theme back this week, which I was happy about. I mean, I like his original AEW song. I wish Jon Moxley would go back to his original AEW song, the Unscripted Violence one. I still think that's the best theme he's had. That's another reason to end this Death Rider shit. Maybe we can go back to that. Forget Wild Thing. Let's just go back to that. So Omega makes his way down to the ring. And Schiavone immediately gives the floor to Will Ospreay, who says that he's thankful Kenny is here and that he is not dead. Which is, you know, a hell of an introduction when you're in the ring with somebody. I think that everybody should open the segment that way. Whenever you share the ring with somebody, you should say, "I'm glad that you're here and you're not dead." Although there may be some people in wrestling who don't necessarily mean that, if they don't like the person that they're in the ring with. Well, I'm happy that Kenny Omega is not dead too. So thank God we have him back on this show. He said, you know, we're used to throwing fists at one another, but he's no longer with the Don Callis family. And he said that Omega came back at a really bad time. Jon Moxley has the AEW world title, and that's something that he wants, but he can't shake the Don Callis family, and he can't do it on his own. Omega took the mic away and said that Ospreay did not remember the last time that they faced each other in the ring. So Omega reminds him that it was Forbidden Door, where Ospreay nearly broke his neck and stabbed him in the head with a screwdriver, the same screwdriver that Don Callis had used on him months earlier. Omega said that he did it because he wanted to prove that he was the best. And it took diverticulitis nearly killing him for anyone to recognize that Ospreay even existed. So he then said that he hoped he enjoyed being number two because number one is back and he would never be able to trust someone like him again. Now, remember that line, okay? I want you to remember that line. I will never be able to trust someone like you ever again. Ospreay called him a prick. They were getting very tense with one another when Don Callis came out on stage and he called them prima donnas. Omega immediately just leaves the ring. He bolts up the ramp. He gets attacked by Konosuke Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher. And Ospreay is standing in the ring and he's watching all this and he's debating whether or not he should go help him. But of course he does. So he leaves the ring and tries to make the save. He fights Fletcher to the ring. Takeshita attacks from behind, but he gets dropped with a Snapdragon. Omega tries a Terminator dive, but he eats a Fletcher thrust kick instead. Fletcher then goes and boots Ospreay over the barricade into the fans and then leaps off of a chair onto him. Callis now is waving in Brian Cage and Lance Archer. So now we got ourselves a huge brawl going on. It spills into the crowd and Archer hit a low blow on Ospreay and knocked him down. There was a flight of stairs. We couldn't even see it. This is a weird building. I don't know what the name of the building was that they were in. And it was a small building, but it looked packed, which, you know, again, just given their attendance issues, it's the best way to go. Run smaller venues and just try to pack them in as much as possible. So it was small, but it looked like they had plenty of people there. But there was this staircase that led down. And I don't think we saw it, but apparently he knocked Ospreay down the stairs because when the cameraman made his way over, Ospreay was laying on the ground. So there was a merchandise table, and Archer puts Ospreay on top of the merchandise table and slides him across it. Archer wanted a choke slam. Omega, though, appeared and made the save. And Omega and Ospreay, they then worked together. They avoided a double choke slam. Instead, they hit a double suplex, and they put Archer through the merch table. So after that, Brian Cage, he takes a trash can. He throws it at Kenny Omega's head. So it's still 3-on-2. Fletcher and Cage, they're beating down Ospreay. Takeshita's fighting with Omega. They kind of work their way back into the arena area. Takeshita wanted a brainbuster on the concrete. Security broke things up long enough for Kenny to avoid it. Ospreay fought off Fletcher and Cage, and then he kind of got popped up into the air, and he grabbed onto the balcony. And Ospreay pulls himself up. So now he's on the ledge of the balcony. Meanwhile, there's a lighting truss right behind them. And Omega climbs the lighting truss and moonsaults off of it. And as soon as he moonsaults off of it, Ospreay does the exact same thing, but off the balcony. And he wipes everybody out down below, right onto the pile. So then Omega and Ospreay, they scale the lighting truss together on opposite sides as the Callis family, they scurry back to the stage area. But Omega has a microphone. So they're standing on this lighting truss and Omega begins to cut a promo and he offers an apology. He goes, you know what? Well, I should apologize to you. And he said that he should have trusted him from the beginning. And then he laid down the challenge to Fletcher and Takeshita for a tag team match against himself and Ospreay at Grand Slam in Australia. We basically got the tag team match here. We got the street fight version of it here on this show. But it's the match that I talked about it last week. Clearly, that was the direction they were going in here. It was not Omega against Ospreay. They were going to be on the same team. The tag match is now official. But remember what I said earlier when Omega pointed out in his promo that he would never be able to trust this man again. So in one breath, in this promo, in the same segment, you have Kenny Omega saying that he can never trust Will Ospreay again. But in the next, he's apologizing to him and offering to team up with him. He's a very forgiving person, this Kenny Omega. But it was a wild opening to the show. I liked it. and you want to open the show hot, that's certainly one way to do it. And you do it with two of your biggest stars. It wasn't just two schmoes who were brawling into the crowd. So they had a wild brawl, and the tag team match at Grand Slam is going to, it's going to be fucking great. I'm not going to be watching it live because I'm not watching that show at 2:30 in the morning. You can fuck right off with that. I'll either be going to bed, first going to bed, or I'll already be in bed sleeping, trying to get at least 4 hours of sleep. But I will not be watching this show live. I will watch it at my leisure, whenever that may be, because I'm going to have a podcast to do the next day. Thanks, guys. But it's going to be a great match. So I'm looking forward to eventually seeing it. But this is a hot start to the show. They aired a little history package for Pac, all the years that he has been in AEW. This was to promote his main event coming up later in the show with Adam Copeland. We go backstage and we go to Jon Moxley, Marina Shafir, and Wheeler fucking Yuta is standing there with him. He's like his young boy. Moxley said that Cope went to sleep in 2011 and he woke up in 2025, not knowing what he has gotten himself into. There's plenty of weak individuals here, and Moxley is more than willing to throw him onto the pile. He said Cope's neck is hanging by a thread, just like Brian Danielson's. And when Cope goes to the doctor and gets bad news, Moxley won't lose any sleep. He doesn't have time to sleep. He doesn't have time for relics of the past. Really? Well, he's got plenty of those here in this company. You got another one who's actually going to be out here later on in the show asking for a world title match. He better get used to it. But he doesn't have time for any of this, he says. He's trying to build a future. More about this future that they're building. We've heard about this a lot. There's some sort of greater good here, and he's trying to build something, right? He's going to build this future. No explanation about what any of this means. We're going on 4 months of this shit. Now, again, you might be able to get away with stuff like that if you actually have a hot angle, if you have something that's over and the people are into, but they're not. Nobody cares. Certainly not enough people care. So he's cutting these promos and he talks in riddles sometimes, and you know, he's all cool and everything. Nobody gives a shit. This is what I'm talking about. He's building a future. What future are you building? What future is he building? I'm not worried about the future. I'm worried about the present. Let's focus on that. I'm not worried so much about the future. Neither is Tony Khan, since he apparently doesn't give a shit, and we're still getting the Death Rider stuff. We're going on 4 months of this. But then we have the Hurt Syndicate. Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin against Private Party for the AEW World Tag Team titles. This was, in a word, if I had to kind of distill it down to one word, a mugging is what this was. And these people were loving every minute of it. The people here in Knoxville loved every second of this. Total dominance from the Hurt Syndicate to start this thing. They were having their way with the tag team champions. Zay and Quinn, they were able to connect on a silly string and then a neckbreaker senton combo. Benjamin kicked out at one. Lashley ate a cutter while he was on the apron. And Benjamin got low bridged. So here comes Private Party. They do the double dives out to the floor, but they got caught into a pair of overhead belly-to-belly throws. Benjamin sent Isaiah Cassidy into the clutches of Bobby Lashley, who flattened him with a spine buster that collapsed the announce desk and took us into commercial. The solid oak announce desk. He did it again this week. Multiple times, Excalibur pushed the idea that they have their solid oak announce desk. Wonder if it hurts more to go through the solid oak, because that table collapsed pretty easily. They come back from break. Mark Quinn now is flying solo because his partner is down on the outside. He's being checked out by Doc Samson. Benjamin slapped him repeatedly from the barricade and then into the edge of the ring. And the crowd is so invested in Private Party, the tag team champions, they chant one more time. And so Shelton Benjamin, he obliges and does does it one more time. Of course, he gives the people what they want. Now, this crowd, not only did they love the Hurt Syndicate, they love Bobby Lashley because they kept chanting, Bobby, Bobby, like he's running for office. They were chanting for Bobby. So many times you would think he's the biggest babyface in this company. If we're being honest, Bobby Lashley is in the top three right now. When you think of the top babyfaces in this company, you got Kenny Omega, you've got Will Ospreay, and you've got Bobby Lashley. Just based on crowd reactions. Just listen to the fans. Bobby Lashley is more over than most of the AEW, most if not all of the AEW originals right now. That's not a good thing, by the way. But that's a fact. They love Bobby Lashley. So Zay makes the tag. Benjamin missed the dive. And Zay hit a diving flatliner. Quinn hit the 450 splash. Only got two. Lashley tagged in. Huge reaction. He flattened Zay with a spear for a two count when Marquen broke up the pin. Benjamin was in to take out Marquen to Suplex City. And Lashley followed with another spine buster. He turned Zay inside out with a spear, and he got the pin to win the tag team titles for the Hurt Syndicate. And as I said earlier, for the first time in his career, he's held many singles championships, MMA. He's had success there. I don't know if he held titles in MMA, but he's been a WWE champion, a TNA World Heavyweight Champion, an Intercontinental Champion, I believe a United States Champion, an ECW Champion. No stranger to gold. First time in his career, though, Bobby Lashley is a tag team champion. As far as the now ex-champions go, they got in a little bit of offense. Just a little bit. But not much. This was total destruction by MVP's crew and a total burial of Private Party. I mean, let's just call it what it was. I mean, they buried these two guys 6 feet beneath the earth. And it's not a burial because they lost the match, right? You don't get buried because you lost one match. You get buried when you win the tag team titles in October, as they did. They beat the Young Bucks, who held those titles for months. Founding fathers of this company, right? The Young Bucks are a big deal in AEW. And Private Party got a win over them on Dynamite. 5 years. It took 5 years, but they reached the top of the mountain, and they won the tag team titles. And that was at the end of October. And here we are now, almost the end of January. And in that time, they have had two successful tag team title defenses. One on pay-per-view, which was a full gear in a four-way. And then one on Collision against Action Andretti and Leo Rush. Outside of that, Private Party, they could barely buy time. You know, you hear about time buys on TV. Put your TV on at 2 o'clock in the morning on one of your local stations. You'll have some fucking infomercial about dick pills or something like that. Yeah, I remember many years ago, some of you may remember, I think he's since passed on, but the name Ron Popeil. Okay, Ron Popeil, he was an inventor and an entrepreneur. He invented many different contraptions, but he used to have this thing. It was called the it was Ronco. I forgot the name of the actual device, but basically you can cook chickens and roasted hens in there and all kinds of stuff. And he would have these infomercials and it would flood the airwaves. And like, it almost didn't even matter, even during the daytime sometimes. You would put the TV on and there it is. There's the Ronco infomercial. And he puts the chicken in the oven and he lifts the lid and you set it and you forget it. I still remember that to this day, right? These guys, if they wanted to buy time on this show, they still couldn't do it. Those were your tag team champions. But they finally got a match for the titles here on Dynamite and they lost them. So they didn't really have a whole lot of support in the few months that they held those tag team titles. But the reality is, I think it was Matt Jackson, well, both Bucks, but Matt Jackson may have been the one who had the quote. This was weeks ago. They were on some podcast or some show. And they explained how plans changed multiple times for who was going to beat them for those tag team titles. Private Party was never Tony Khan's original choice to win the titles. I don't know who his original choice was. And I'm sure the Outrunners at one point were penciled in, but ultimately they settled on Private Party. But it's very clear that Tony Khan, he was like, they weren't his choice. If they were his choice, he would have given them a little more support. But they weren't. And you could tell just based on how they were booked. They were barely booked as the tag team champions. And so they end up being transitional champions, which is all they were ever really intended to be, instead of trying to build them into something just a little bit bigger than what they were. 5 years. They finally win the titles, and nothing changed. It was one night. It was one night out of 5 years. That's it. They didn't even really have a run. And look, I say that. Look, I'm all for the Hurt Syndicate getting...
Samoa Bro.
I'm all for the Hurt Syndicate getting a big push, and I love how they're booked like absolute monsters. I'm loving this career resurgence that Shelton Benjamin has had. I think he's been fantastic since he joined this company. And they're the hot hand right now. All you got to do is listen. All right? Just listen, brother. You could hear the reactions everywhere they go, every city, every single week. They love these guys. So you go with the hot hand. I get it. I don't even blame him for wanting to do that and going with the hot hand. I just wish that Private Party had a little more respect during their run as two guys that have been there since day one in this company. You know, they are two of the AEW originals. And I don't think they're going to get another run after this. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. You know, I like those two guys. I hope they do get another run, but do I honestly think they will? I don't. This was probably the peak, and it didn't last very long. And it's too bad, but they're the hot hand right now, the Hurt Syndicate. So Tony wanted to put the belts on them. And so where does Private Party go from here? I have no idea. You know where they go? They go right to the back of the line. That's where they go. But even the Hurt Syndicate, okay, they're the hot hand right now. They have the tag team titles. What's next? I mean, outside of maybe a rematch with Private Party, what's next? The tag team division is not what it used to be. The tag team division used to be just the hottest tag team division in all of wrestling. That has not been the case for a very long time. So who's next? What's next now for the Hurt Syndicate? Does Tony even know? We'll find out. But the tag team division right now needs a lot of work. And I suspect that Lashley and Benjamin are going to be holding on to those titles for quite some time. We got a video package on the rematch coming up between Mariah May and Toni Storm at Grand Slam Australia. And just documenting the history between these two women. And Mariah talking about how AEW doesn't deserve her. They don't. And she can't wait to meet Toni Storm. They're going to meet for the first time on Collision. They're going to get a formal introduction. Because, of course, Toni has no idea, right? Toni has never met Mariah May before. So they're going to meet for the first time. Now, we go backstage live with Renee. Toni Storm is there. And she says she can't wait until Saturday when Harley Cameron slides into the camera shot and interrupts and wishes her good luck. And I'm doing my best to translate here because I'm going to be honest with you. As these two were having their conversation, I could barely understand a fucking word they were saying. they were all excited about Australia and they were laying the accent on real thick and I could barely understand them. But Tony said there's no reason that Harley can't also wrestle in Australia. And they start talking about various Aussie references. And she said to Harley, I'll see you in Australia. Even Renee looked completely baffled by all of this. Renee is probably looking at them going, I don't know what's going on here. Alex Marvez was in the back with Jeff Jarrett. You know, we live in a world where Alex Marvez has gotten more television time on this show than people like Ricky Starks and Ray Phoenix over the past year. I want you to think about that. So he was interviewing Jeff Jarrett. Immediately, though, he is cut off by Karen Jarrett. She said that she didn't like him getting down in the dirt in that promo last week with MJF and said, that's not who you are anymore. He said that he understood and he would take care of it. And then he headed out to the ring because he had something to say. So Jarrett gets into the ring. And to be fair, the people in Knoxville, They cheered mightily here for Jeff Jarrett. They were very happy to see Jeff Jarrett here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And he said that it was great to be back in the Volunteer State. Is that what Tennessee is? Is that what they're called? The Volunteer State? Is there a reason for that? I don't know the history behind that. But he was wondering what he was going to say here tonight, and it made him think of Jerry the King Lawler. And Jarrett said he remembers when he was younger, he got his ass kicked in the ring in a match one night, and then he got in some verbal jabs before going to the back. And Lawler is the one who pulled him aside and told him, don't ever get in the gutter with your opponent. And Jarrett remembered that advice, and he said MJF will find out exactly who the last outlaw is. He said they're going to settle this Southern style. No lights, no camera. I mean, after all, you're dedicating weeks worth of promos. There better be a fucking camera. I love that. No camera. I'm going to come out on television and waste your time every single week building up a match, but there's not going to be any camera. We'll tell you about it after the fact. No lights, no camera. He's taking MJF out to the woodshed to beat his ass. Jarrett said he wants to talk about the fans who inspired him to enter the Owen Hart Cup last year. They gave him the gift of believing a 57-year-old man could become the AEW World Champion. Jarrett said that it's time to get down to business, and he calls out Jon Moxley to come on out for a talk. We hear the Death Riders music, and Jarrett's in the ring, and he's waiting for Moxley. He doesn't get Moxley, though. He gets attacked from behind by Claudio Castagnoli, who says that nobody gets to Moxley without going through him first. And Claudio gave one piece of advice to Jarrett. He said, stay out of our business. And he was still holding the microphone as he left back through the crowd. Jarrett, though, in the ring, he recovered, and he took another mic. And he said Claudio is going to have to kill him to stop him. Jarrett said if he beats Claudio next week, they're going to have a match. And if he beats Claudio next week, then he gets a shot at Jon Moxley and the AEW World Championship. What do you say? And Claudio, again, still had a mic in his hand. He said that beating Jarrett lifeless is an interesting proposition. And he'll see him next week. I have to say this because I pointed this out about Adam Cole, and so it's only fair that I point this out about Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett was out there, and this man was, he was practically glowing out there. He was so orange. He looked radioactive. It was ridiculous. I thought I was trying to adjust the settings on my screen. I thought maybe the saturation was up too much. I'll say this, at least they kept this segment relatively short, and my initial thought was that, obviously, MJF is going to interfere in this match next week, and is going to cost Jeff Jarrett a win, and that will then lead into the MJF-Jeff Jarrett match. It's one of two ways, though. It may not go that way. I could also see Jarrett eking out a win, and maybe he gets his title match soon with Jon Moxley. They don't drag this out for the next 6 months. He gets his title match, and then MJF costs him the title in that match. It's one of the two. I tend to think that MJF will get involved next week, and Jarrett is not going to get his title match, at least not right now. He's not going to get his title match because they have to do Jarrett and MJF before they even think about doing that. But it's going to be one or the other. But they kept this relatively brief. It's the best thing I could say about it. They had a quick video package for Megan Bain. They showed some highlights of her coming out in the women's gauntlet match last week. So what this did, she wasn't on the show tonight, but what this did was it confirmed that it was not a one-off. She is in. She is signed, I assume, and we're going to be seeing more of her on TV, which is good. How much of her we're going to see, of course, remains to be seen because she wasn't on the show tonight, but last week was not a one-off. So we will be seeing more of Megan Bain in AEW. We had Swerve Strickland in the ring tonight with a familiar face, an old face from his past in AR Fox. The last time that AR Fox appeared on AEW Dynamite, you would have to go back over a year. It was November of 2023. It was the last time we saw him on the show. Since then, for the most part, outside of a Rampage or a Collision here and there, he's been hanging out in Ring of Honor. He was back on Dynamite tonight. A lot of history between these two men. If you are a Lucha Underground disciple, as I am, then you know the Hell of War. You remember the Hell of War, because it's hard to forget a match like that. And when I was thinking about the Hell of War match they had all those years ago, it made me realize, like, some of the most violent matches. I've been watching wrestling a very long time. Okay, I've been watching wrestling north of, let's just say 37-ish years, okay? And in all the years that I've been watching wrestling, some of the most violent matches that I have ever seen have involved Swerve Strickland. And yeah, I wasn't into the whole fucking FMW, Onita thing, or CZW, and like the really hardcore dumb bullshit and all that. But in terms of like hardcore type matches, Swerve has been involved in some of the most violent that I've seen. Because the match with it was Dante Fox and Killshot, the match that they had, like when that match was over, I remember them zooming in on what looked like a chunk of flesh from, I think it was Swerve's back, that was just laying there on the mat. And that right there just said it all about the brutality of the match that those two guys had. And then, of course, the Texas death match in AEW between Swerve and Hangman, the cage match they had last year at All Out. Some sick shit. We got the, you know, Matt Cardona goes around calling himself the Deathmatch King. No. Swerve Strickland is the Deathmatch King. So after a commercial break, Fox hit a springing moonsault from the ropes to the outside, but as he went for a follow-up springboard inside, Strickland caught him with a fireman's carry into a power slam. Swerve signaled for a house call kick, but Ricochet, in a suit, he ran out to the ring. He had those golden scissors that he used to bloody up Swerve a few weeks ago. He was attempting to stab him again, but thankfully he was unsuccessful. Prince Nana had a steel pipe. I don't know where that came from, but he chased Ricochet away. Fox missed the 450 splash, but he rolled through big pressure to get a two count. Strickland was still able to hit a rolling flatliner. He hit the house call kick and then a Swerve stomp to pick up the win. Now, when the match was over, Ricochet was shown up on the big screen. He was in the back. He said, "Next week, everyone will be forced to hear what he has to say." See, that's a good way to put it, actually. We're going to be forced. We're going to be subjected to a Ricochet promo on the show next week. And then they kind of pull back, and we see that he is holding the golden scissors up to the throat, to the neck of Prince Nana. Ricochet said there's a new landlord in town and rent is due. And then he leaves without slitting the man's throat, which was nice. Well, now it makes sense that nobody likes Ricochet if he's comparing himself to a landlord, because nobody likes landlords. But I thought the match here, Swerve and AR Fox, they had a good match. They also found a way to keep the issue going between Swerve and Ricochet. That match is not happening until Atlanta. They're not in Atlanta until February 5th. So we have another couple of weeks to go. But it served that purpose, at least to build to whatever we're going to get between the two of them on the show next week. That's going to be the final hard sell before the match in Atlanta. So good match, and it served a purpose at least. This week's episode is sponsored by DraftKings. How about that game between Washington and Detroit on Saturday? The Commanders eliminate the number one seed Lions to move on to the NFC Championship game. Absolute madness, the joy and sorrow of football. As you can tell, the playoffs are in full swing, and you can get in on all the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New DraftKings customers can bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets instantly. And you've got a couple of big games today in the divisional round, so it's a great time to place your first bet. If you don't already have an account, go ahead and set one up in the DraftKings Sportsbook app. It's super easy. Once you do, you'll be able to check out the money lines for upcoming games. So the Rams and the Eagles, they play first today, and the Eagles have won their past 8 home games. So with that game taking place in Philly, it's no surprise that the Eagles are the favorite at minus 325 with the Rams at plus 260. Then later, we've got the Ravens and the Bills. You could tell from the odds here, as I'm in the app, this one's a little more even than that first game. The money line has Baltimore at minus 118 and Buffalo at minus 102. But that's not the only thing you could place your first bet on. You could check the app for the odds on top touchdown score, number of receptions, the outcome of the first drive of the game, even touchdown props. There's plenty to browse through here, but always remember, lines and odds are subject to change. Have I mentioned that new DraftKings customers can bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets instantly? I did? Well, let me say it again. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SOLOMONSTER. That's code SOLOMONSTER for new customers to get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see dkng.co/audio.
We had highlights of last week's main event for the AEW World Championship in Cincinnati between Jon Moxley and Powerhouse Hobbs. Oh, what a discussion that was last week. So we got highlights of that, and then there was a face-off on Collision. Because even though they pilmanized Hobbs' leg on the show last week at the very end, and then the baby faces came out to rescue him, he was at the tapings the next day for Collision. He was in the 12-man tag. Then they shot an angle on Collision before the match where Jericho and the Learning Tree crew took out Hobbs with a baseball bat to the knee. Now, why they had to pilmanize the leg on Wednesday if they were going to shoot a segment on Saturday where they took a baseball bat to his leg, I have no fucking idea. But whoever came up with that obviously is not the brightest bulb in the box. But they had the 12-man tag. Hobbs limped out there midway through the match. He ended up winning the match. He pinned Brian Keith, and we had a little face-off at one point with him and Big Bill. This segued into another New York Minute segment, a New York Minute update with the Ring of Honor World Champion, Chris Jericho. And Jericho said, unfortunately, the Learning Tree failed last week on Collision. Big Bill did his words of wisdom before he was scolded by Jericho, who said, learning moments only work if you learn from them. When will Bill take the knowledge that Jericho bestowed upon him and actually do something with it? And Bill thought about this, and he said, Hobbs won the match last week, but he didn't beat me. He didn't beat Big Bill. Hobbs can't beat him. So this Saturday on Collision, Bill is coming to find Hobbs. Well, at least Hobbs and, because I like Big Bill, at least Hobbs and Big Bill, I think, should be fun. But for the sake of Will Hobbs, please, for the love of God, after this match this weekend, get this man the fuck away from the Learning Tree. It really is, right? It really is like there's this vortex. And if you get too close to it, it could suck you right in. It's like some portal to another dimension that you don't want to visit. So do the match. It could be good. It could be fun. But get him away from Jericho. Like, I'm glad that at least Hobbs was talked about and briefly featured on the show tonight instead of just being completely forgotten about. At least they're doing something with him. But this ain't it. Of all the things they could be doing with him, that's the one thing I don't want to see them doing, is having anything to do with Jericho and whatever the hell Jericho is doing. Please. Now, there was an unknown talent standing in the ring, getting ready for the next match. And despite this, we hear MJF's music. And he walks down to the ring. And clearly, he's not in his wrestling gear, so he's not wrestling whoever this guy was in the ring. MJF gets in the ring. He tells him, get the hell out. He says Jeff Jarrett owes him an apology. Actually, he owes an apology to everyone for his actions last week, especially him. When MJF said that he would help Jarrett win the AEW World title if he then got the first shot, it wasn't because he believed in Jarrett, it was because he thought he would be the easiest to beat. He said that if Jarrett thinks he can do it on his own, he is as senile as he looks. By the time Claudio Castagnoli is done beating his brains in next week, Jarrett will realize this. And MJF said that pro wrestling doesn't love Jarrett anymore. And neither do the fans. But sometimes you're better off making a deal with the devil rather than defying him. So Hangman Adam Page comes out because he was supposed to be coming down to the ring to wrestle this jabron, whoever it was in the ring, in this next match before MJF interrupted. So here comes Hangman Page, and he kind of gets up in MJF's face, basically tells him, get the hell out of there. And MJF walks off without any incident. So I believe the guy's name was Tyler Shoop. That's what I wrote down here. Tyler Shoop, if that is his real name, was in the ring for a match with Hangman Page. This did not go very long. Page booted him and then hit a huge clothesline for the win. This went maybe 20 seconds. But he wasn't done, though. Page hit him with the Angel's Wings and then stood over him until Christopher Daniels' music hit. Now, I wrote down here, Christopher Daniels' music hits. I'll be honest with you, I don't have any fucking idea what his music even is. I heard music, and I thought somebody was debuting. Until they cut and they showed the name Christopher Daniels on the Tron. It was like, okay, well, that's very helpful. That was like me sitting in at Tropicana Field last year for the Royal Rumble during the Women's Rumble, when probably at least half the women came out. I would hear the music and be like, who the fuck is that? Until I looked up and I saw the name and I said, ah, okay. Everything is so generic these days. How are you supposed to tell who's who? Like, most of this music has no personality. But it's not like Daniels is a featured performer on this show. How the hell am I supposed to know what his music sounds like? But here he is again. And so Christopher Daniels, he's all dressed up in his suit. He's wearing a neck brace. And he walks out on stage. Now, why is he wearing a neck brace? Because some of you, I'm sure, do not watch Collision. And may not have seen the Texas Deathmatch that these two had, that they had on Saturday. And it was bloody, and it was a Texas Deathmatch. It was a garbage match. And Daniels lost. And we come to find out afterwards that that match was his last match. So now it kind of makes sense why they have done this angle over the past month, leading to a match between him and Hangman, because he probably knew this is my last match. And he probably handpicked Hangman and said, I want you to be my final opponent. So they built a little angle out of it, and that was his swan song. Christopher Daniels is officially retired. But he got his ass kicked in the match, and that's why he was out there wearing a neck brace. So Page sees him. He immediately leaves the ring, races down the short aisle, and gets right up in his face, and basically asks him, do you want me to beat your ass again? And Daniel said, look, I never wanted to fight you in the first place. He realizes that he was just pouring gas on the fire. His ego escalated this, and he regrets facing Hangman, the most violent man in the most violent match. After the last Buckshot Lariat in their Texas Death Match, the doctors have advised him to never wrestle again. Daniel said that, Page, you win. He won the last match that he will ever wrestle. He apologizes, and he said that he hopes Hangman can be happy now. And he leaves. He leaves Hangman to ponder what it is that he just said. He was the only one who reacted to this news. Hangman Page, that is. Because I will tell you, and this was a pretty hot crowd for, I would say, much of the show. They were not a dead crowd tonight in Knoxville. But I will tell you that these people could not have possibly given less of a shit, not one single solitary shit, about Christopher Daniels coming out here and announcing his retirement. I mean, if they were going for the reaction like boos or sad boos or, oh my God, is this final match? Like, nobody cared. Nobody cared. And why would they? I mean, think about it, right? I know that there's a lot of diehard wrestling fans who love AEW, so they know their wrestling history, and they were probably watching Unbreakable back in 2005, you know, when he had that classic triple threat match with Samoa Joe and AJ Styles. So they probably know his whole fucking Wikipedia biography. But there are a lot of people who don't. There are a lot of people who look at him and go, hey, that's the guy who, when we see him, he's a backstage guy, right? He's an agent, or he's an executive. he's Tony Khan's voice who comes out and announces matches that Tony Khan wants to make. Like, that's the role that he's been in now on television for a very long time. There are people watching this going, wait, I thought this guy was already retired. He's a backstage authority figure. So it rings hollow when you think about it, because he wasn't wrestling. All of a sudden, he comes back and has a match out of nowhere. And he comes out, and I guess they're expecting to get all the sympathy because I've wrestled my last match, right? I mean, you could hear crickets and see the tumbleweed blow by. Nobody cared. Because in their mind, they're probably like, I thought he was already retired. It would be like Shawn Michaels coming out on Raw this Monday. Actually, he's going to be at Saturday night's main event. They're going to be in San Antonio. It would be like Shawn Michaels coming out, probably in any city other than San Antonio, because he'll be loved there. But coming out and saying, I would like to announce my retirement. And by the way, even that, of course, would get more of a reaction than Christopher Daniels would. But it's like, motherfucker, you've been retired for over a decade now. Like, it would be weird. So it was kind of sad, but also not unexpected that people would just be very indifferent towards it. But what did we accomplish here? That's what I wrote down here. What did we accomplish here? Because there may be people who look at this segment and they go, what was the point of this? What did we really get out of this? Why is Hangman out there wrestling a 20-second match? What we got out of this, the biggest takeaway for me was the little tease. Nothing was said, but the little tease of something bubbling between MJF and Hangman Page. Because that's a program that I could get behind. MJF and Hangman, MJF and Swerve. Like, that's the kind of thing that I want to see. I don't have an interest in MJF and Jeff Jarrett. You know, look, can we skip over that and get to the good stuff, please? We got a tease of it here. So I like that. And hopefully we'll start to flesh that out a little bit more in the weeks to come, because you have to expect MJF just kind of threw his hands up in the air when Hangman was telling him to get lost and said, okay, and he left. He's not going to let that lie, right? There's going to be some follow-up to that. So they planted a seed for that. They zoomed in on Hangman's face to get his reaction. After Daniels, even though the crowd didn't care, to get his reaction to the news that you just gave me my last match. And I just wanted to say, I'm sorry. And then he walks off. And you saw that look on Hangman's face where he was pondering, you know, what have I done? You know, that's kind of the way that I read his face. And what I think my sense of it now, between the tease of him and MJF and the look on his face there where maybe he had regret, is that instead of it being more unhinged heel Hangman, we're heading more towards unhinged babyface Hangman, right? We're not going back. We're not going straight back to the old Hangman Page. He's still going to be kind of a crazy man, but it feels like now the pendulum has swung or is swinging back into the babyface column for him. So it was a segment where you got a few things out of it. It wasn't a totally pointless segment just because he had a 20-second match. There are some important things to come out of this. Now, Mercedes Moné was in the back with her four belts to set up a backstage celebration of some kind with balloons. What for? I have no idea. They had balloons set up. And I'm thinking to myself, what are we celebrating? Because if we're celebrating her Rev Pro title win, that was at Wrestle Dynasty. That was 2.5 weeks ago. Why are we first having a celebration now? Right? It's just fucking weird. But there was no celebration because she was interrupted by Harley Cameron. I mean, Renee was there to interview Mercedes, but she was interrupted by Harley Cameron, who had her guitar with her. This was Harley's second appearance on the show, by the way, which I am all in favor of. Because what I said this a few weeks ago, Harley Cameron is someone who should be featured more on these shows, especially the main show. And she was in two different segments tonight. Good. Good. Hopefully next week she'll be in three. Because I find her very entertaining. And she's very talented, too. She had her guitar with her, and she sang a song that she obviously wrote herself. And talking about how she wants to ride the money train, the Moné train. And basically she wants a title match in Australia because Tony Storm earlier said, hey, you know what? You could have a match too on that show. So she was making the pitch here for a TBS title match on Grand Slam against Mercedes. And Mercedes said that she wanted to wrestle the very best. Harley, though, has never won a match. She hasn't won a match this year. She didn't win a match on TV last year. She's never won a match on AEW television. So she says that's a hard no. And she disappeared off into her dressing room. And so she was left very dejected, and Renee tried to cheer her up and told her that, well, it was a good song, though. It was a good song, actually. I thought it was a good song. She's very talented. The thing about Harley Cameron is she's entertaining. And I think when you are charismatic and when you're entertaining, then you will find a place on the show. I think Tony Khan recognizes that, because you could tell week by week, we're starting to see a little bit more of Harley Cameron on more than just Collision. And I think that's a great thing. Hopefully we get to see more of her. I am expecting that she will get the match with Mercedes. We have another 2.5 weeks. Still plenty of time for her to be convinced. And then it's somebody for Mercedes to defend her title against. They have not set anybody else up. They've done a fucking piss poor job of setting anybody up to be the next challenger for the TBS title. I don't know who it's going to be. I mean, it'll be Harley Cameron, but she's not going to win. The next serious challenger, someone for Revolution. They've given us no indication of who that's going to be. Nothing on this show anyway, these last few weeks. Has she even been on the show the last few weeks? I guess that's why she was having her big celebration tonight. She hasn't even been around. We got part two between Julia Hart and Jamie Hayter. This was the That 70s Show portion of Dynamite. Hayter got the early advantage, took things out to the floor, and Julia tried to fight back, only to get sent crashing into the ring steps. Back inside, there was a nice missile drop kick by Jamie that got her a near fall. Julia had the upper hand during the commercial, but Hayter was able to cut her off with a back superplex out of the corner for a double down. Both women slugged it out as they got to their feet. Hayter sidestepped the backdrop and hit a German that dropped Julia very awkwardly on her shoulder. Hopefully not the one that had the torn labrum. Jamie sank in a half crab. Julia got the ropes, and then she managed to apply a flying octopus hold. But Jamie countered into a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker. Julia pulled the hair to escape and then hit a crucifix bomb for a close two. And Jamie came back with a hate breaker and then finally the Haterade Lariat. And she was able to get the pin to pick up the win. And when the match was over, Jamie took the microphone. And she said that she's not one to butter someone else's bread, but she has a lot of respect for people like Julia who march to the beat of their own drum. But spitting crap in her face or trying to kill her with an arrow, that doesn't fly with her. You see, attempted murder is not cool, according to Jamie Hayter. Whether Julia has two big men by her side or she's all alone with nobody beside her, she's still a tough bitch. She won one. I won one. Whenever you want it, I'm up for a rubber match. Very similar promo to the one that Will Ospreay cut on Buddy Matthews after he beat him a few weeks ago, where he really put him over and said, it doesn't matter if you want to challenge for the tag team titles. You could challenge for a singles title if you wanted to, whether you have people with you or not. Like, it's the same basic promo that he cut on Buddy. And here you had Jamie putting Julia over. And it was nice to see her, putting her opponent over, especially because we know we're going to get a third match between these two. So what purpose would it serve if Jamie just buried her on the mic, right? It's like, well, if you think so little of your opponent, what's the point in even doing the match? But she put her over and said, look, I respect the hell out of you, right? You're a tough bitch. You do your own thing. You don't take crap. I look forward to wrestling you one more time to see who the better woman is. Sounds good to me. As far as their second match here, I liked it better than their first match. So I'm looking forward to the third match. I thought this was solid stuff from these two. Powerhouse Hobbs was on the show tonight for all of 20 seconds. He was standing in the back. This is what he flew to Knoxville for. He flew to Knoxville to stand in a storm, apparently, to stand in the back and to tell us that on Collision, Big Bill, I'll be there. Meet me in the parking lot. That was the last we saw or heard from Will Hobbs on this show tonight. Swerve Strickland was in the back. He was not in a good mood. He was pacing. Prince Nana was there. He was screaming that in 2 weeks, the lion finally gets his hands on the rodent. Maybe, though, he'll catch Ricochet a little sooner than that. They aired a pre-recorded vignette showing Brody King, Buddy Matthews, and Julia Hart walking the streets. And Brody said that for years they've had a voice to guide them. The voice was deafening, but now that voice has gone silent. Matthews said they're done living in the shadows. Julia said it's time to honor themselves. No leaders, no masters, no gods. Just violence. And when they bark together. In case you didn't already know, the House of Black is dead. Malakai Black is as good as gone from AEW. And if he is not officially gone from AEW yet, he will be within the next few weeks. And I would expect that he will end up back in WWE. But it looks like in place of the House of Black, they are now going to be called the Hounds of Hell. Looks like that's the name they're going to be going with. What I thought was weird about this was just the positioning of this segment, because you had Julia Hart in this segment, right? And they're talking tough. Why air this immediately after she just lost to Jamie Hayter? Like, there was one little segment in between, but it basically aired right after her loss. So that was very weird. I don't know why you would position it there on the show. But otherwise, you know, look, I hope they have success, but I thought that the House of Black was going to have more success than they did. So I would anticipate that it's going to be basically just House of Black Part 2, and it's not going to be all that much different, except now they can't go for the Trios titles unless they add somebody, because it's basically just the tag team and Julia Hart. Now, if you want to make them a tag team, you can certainly do that, and I would love one day to have Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin defending their titles against Buddy Matthews and Brody King. I think that would be fantastic. The tag team division, frankly, could use a team like that. For the time being, maybe that's the best thing for them. The main event was Pac against Adam Copeland. Up to this point, I didn't think it was a bad show. There were things I thought were bad that I didn't like, but I liked more than I didn't like. And then we got to this, and I thought I would at least really like the main event. Cope sent Pac to the floor by sending him through the middle rope with a head scissors. Then he planted him into the steps with a wheelbarrow slam. Copeland then slammed Pac into the announce desk, the solid oak desk. They got back in the ring very briefly. Didn't last long, though. Pac sent Cope into the edge of the ring on the outside and then delivered a blow to the side of the head that caused Copeland to sell his previously surgically repaired neck. He was selling it like, uh-oh, something happened here. Now, I should also point out that it was during this match where Excalibur began running down the matches for next week's show. And I think he might have put some of the matches in Collision in there as well. But he was talking about, you know, Tony Khan just added, and he mentioned Will Ospreay. He's going to be wrestling Brian Cage on the show next week. And Tony Schiavone, after Excalibur was done speaking, Schiavone was trying to put over the match announcement by repeating it, only when he repeated it, he said that it was on Collision. And Excalibur kindly corrected him and said, well, Tony, it's actually on Dynamite next week. I'm sorry to correct you, Tony, but that match is taking place next Wednesday, not on Saturday. And all I could think is, because I know a lot of people shit on Schiavone and, you know, his commentary, and all I'll say is this. I get it. Like, hey, Tony, I totally get it. It's okay. I can barely keep track of half the shit that they throw at me when they're promoting match after match after match at the very end of the show. It's better than it used to be, because they used to do this thing where, and you remember, they used to do this thing where Excalibur would try to speak as fast as humanly possible. Like, it became a thing where Tony Khan was probably like Vince McMahon. We would hear stories about Vince McMahon laughing at stupid things on TV that would kind of get him off. I could picture Tony Khan doing that. Like, every time Excalibur would do the speed read, he probably thought it was funny. It became like a running gag. I thought it was fucking terrible because you're trying to run down the matches for the following week's show. And legitimately, like, how are you supposed to keep track of it? How are you supposed to absorb it? Like, he would just talk so fast. I didn't find it funny. I just thought it was stupid. At least he doesn't do that anymore. I don't remember when he stopped, but it's been a while since we've had him do that. But I could understand if Tony Schiavone, you know, he's getting up there, right? Tony's probably mid-60s, late 60s, close to 70 at this point. He looks great for his age. I'm not saying he looks his age, but, you know, look, I get it. It's understandable. So after the break, Copeland fought back with a drop kick that launched Pac clear across the ring. Pac sold this great. This was a fantastic sell by Pac. Flapjack at a sky high from Copeland got a near fall. It took a long time for Cope to follow up. But a misdirect lariat turned Pac inside out. The Impaler DDT connected. Copeland, though, again was slow to capitalize. He wanted the spear. Pac leapfrogged him. Copeland got a fireman's carry, only for Pac to turn it into a standing brutalizer. And Copeland started to fade in the submission hold, but luckily for him, he fell into the ropes. Pac wanted the gut-wrench German, but opted for a thrust kick to the neck, and then the bounce-back German. Bryce Remsburg, he went over to check on Copeland, make sure he was okay and he could continue. Pac slid in for the brutalizer, and Copeland, still locked in the hold, slowly powered up to his feet and then drove Pac down for the reset. Cope hit a spear from behind to the lower back and then hit a proper spear from the front. But then he didn't win with that. He hit a spinning TKO. And then he covered Pac and then he pinned him. So that was different. That's a new move that I don't think I've seen him win with before. Look, Pac, he sold the shit out of some of these Copeland moves. And he was bouncing around and bumping around in there like crazy. He tried, but I was completely bored by this. And going 18 minutes didn't help. But I'm going to assume the reason is because they had time added to the match. Again, they had travel issues. There was bad weather. Samoa Joe and Nick Wayne were supposed to wrestle on this show. At least one of them couldn't make it to the show. That's why the match got canceled. So, or postponed. I'm sure they'll have it on another show. So with that match being cut, this match probably had some time added to it. So I understand that. But as main events go, I just thought this was a miss. Like I said, just completely bored by this. And you will not hear me say that very often about a Pac match. Because I think Pac is great, but this was not. Now, when the match was over, there was a video that popped up on the big screen. Speaking of things that were not great, there was a video that aired on the big screen. It's Moxley and the Death Riders. And they're in the back, and we see FTR. They are tied up. Okay, Cash Wheeler is tied to a chair. Dax is tied to a chair, but he's laying on the floor. And then also there's two other men. And at first I didn't know who it was. And I'm like, wait a minute. That's Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson. Now, they were on the show weeks ago. How many weeks ago was this? Right? I don't even remember if that was Dynamite or Collision. I think it was Dynamite. But weeks ago, the Rock and Roll Express made a special appearance. And the Death Riders threatened them. But in the end, they didn't do anything to them, right? They were pretty much left unharmed. That was when they got taped, right? Their mouth got taped and whatever. They were basically kidnapped in the building. So the Rock and Roll Express are apparently just hanging out in the back. I guess maybe now they're going around with Copeland and FTR hanging out with them. I don't know. They weren't advertised for the show. They weren't supposed to be on the show. And they're laying on the ground, and the Death Riders proceed to deliver a concerto to Ricky Morton. So they have killed Ricky Morton. Moxley then tells Copeland, stay right there. And the Death Riders make their way into the arena, and they come through the crowd. They have Cope surrounded now in the ring. They all jumped him. They delivered a 5-on-1 beating until Jay White came out to make the save. He headed right for the Death Riders, trying to fight them off. He damn near did it until he suffered a low blow from Wheeler fucking Yuta just before he could deliver a Blade Runner to Jon Moxley. Moxley applied a bulldog choke to Copeland while the rest of the crew held down Jay White, and both men were left laying to close the show. So it's going to be Jay White most likely getting the Grand Slam title shot against Jon Moxley, and they're going to save Copeland, it looks like, for Revolution in March. You know, the stuff with the Death Riders, I've already talked about the Death Riders stuff and how fucking awful it is. But, you know, when I mentioned Christopher Daniels earlier and how he walked out on stage and said that I've been told that I can't wrestle again, my career is over. And he's somebody who's been in the wrestling business for decades. He's going back to the late 90s, right? So you would think it would be a bigger deal, and people didn't care. They were indifferent towards it. An angle like this, the Rock and Roll Express, they're laying there on the ground. I'm not even sure if people in the building even knew who it was. Because it's not like, unless they did something in front of the live crowd that I'm not aware of, like, they were face down on the ground. So Ricky Morton takes this concerto, and this did not get the kind of heat that you would want an angle like this to get. If you're going to shoot an angle like that and try to put heat on the Death Riders, then they should be beating up people that the fans care about. Nobody in this building and nobody watching this show at this point is going to give a shit. Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson, yes, the Rock and Roll Express, great. Okay, what does it mean? Who cares? What does it even mean? This got no heat. Nobody gives a shit because they don't take the time to really build these things up to where you are invested in it. That angle right there should have gotten, it should have drawn gasps from the crowd. But then again, we saw the Death Riders pilmanize Will Hobbs last week, and he was back the very next fucking show like nothing even happened. So it just feels like none of this shit matters. You have a dead angle. Nobody cares. So when they do something like this, people are just, they're just indifferent towards it. They don't feel anything. They just feel apathy. That's what I feel towards this. This got no heat. Why should people care? Give them a reason to care. They don't do that. And this is your main angle. You would think with your main storyline that you would take the time to do that. And they either don't or they do, but they don't do a very good job of it because this is the reaction that it's getting. And to go back to what I said earlier, when you are setting up for Jeff Jarrett and Adam Copeland to be two of your primary challengers for your world championship in these next several months, there is something very, very wrong with this company right now. Darby Allin is gone. He's not going to be back for months. Kenny Omega, Will Ospreay, they'll get their shot, but obviously they're not going to that in the immediate future. So this is what we're left with. This is what we're left with. What we're left with is not good. And as your main angle goes, so too goes the rest of the show. So I can sit here and tell you that there were a lot of things on this show that I liked, and I didn't think it was a bad show. And then we hit the main event, and everything just came to a screeching halt. You know, that has to change. I don't expect it to, but I wish it would. I really do. I wish they would be able to hit on something that just strikes a chord and gets hot. I don't know what that is. I don't know that they're capable of finding it, and even if they do find it, it's probably something they fall ass backwards into. Sometimes somebody gets over. You can't predict it. We've seen that in wrestling. We've seen that in WWE. We've seen that in AEW. People get hot. Look what happened with the Outrunners, right? One day, I didn't know who they were. The next day, I'm watching some of their vignettes on social media. I'm like, these guys are fucking awesome. And you're starting to hear the crowds get behind them more, right? It's an organic thing. I hope somebody organically can get over. If they do, do I trust that Tony Khan will take great care of that and know what to do with that person? I don't have a lot of faith, but I hope it happens. I hope they get something going here. Because whatever it is here, this ain't it. I can tell you that. Here's a Twitter poll. What did you think of Dynamite for January 22nd? 36% thumbs up, 64% thumbs down. All right. Hey, the real CS. Thank you for the $4.99. We'll start with him. Real CS says, TNA just announced that they will be holding a live episode of Impact from NXT's old stomping ground, Full Sail, in late February. I did see that. They're going to be running Full Sail University. I think that's great. I miss those old NXT shows at Full Sail. That's what got me into NXT in the first place. Those shows that air there, like that whole period. That period is where that initial period, basically, of NXT is what got me into NXT in the first place. Josh Carlos, 98. MJF versus Jeff Jarrett equals Oompa Loompa match. Who can be more orange? Says Solo, who does Bret Hart hate more in order? Hogan, HBK, Goldberg, Vince, or El Dandy? Well, he loves El Dandy. I mean, who are you to doubt El Dandy? So you got to put El Dandy at the bottom. I think he's got a lot of love for El Dandy. He's got a lot of love for Shawn Michaels now. The two of them are friendly. The one that he hates the most is Goldberg. And not far behind Goldberg is Hulk Hogan. See, Bret is always right. Ragnarok with the $5 super chat. My grandfather lost his match with cancer this morning. Sound off and TNT helped keep my mind off of things today. Thanks to you and JD for what you do. Much love. Ragnarok, my condolences to you. I'm very sorry to hear about your grandfather. I always hate hearing about the C word. It's the thing that if I had one, you know, a genie popped out of a lamp and said I had one wish that could be granted, it would be to eradicate that from the world. So I'm very sorry to hear that. I'm glad that you can get something out of these shows. Hopefully help take your mind off things a little bit tonight, I hope. But we're lucky to have you here, so I'm sure you're getting a lot of love in the live chat, brother. Just keep your head up. Trill Mexican. Boy, Trill Mexican, he loves that song Back to Love that I've been playing at the beginning of some of these streams. He loves that song. I know every time he hears it, he lights up like a Christmas tree, so I'm glad you enjoy it. Oz CEO fan Inglorious. The Death Riders are the NWO. If it was just Hollywood Hogan with Scott Norton as Pac, Wall Street as Claudio, Horace Hogan as Marina Shafir, and David Flair as Wheeler Yuta. Now, there ain't no Hogan in this group. Hogan was a draw. There ain't nobody in this group drawing anything right now. You're comparing Moxley to Hulk Hogan? I mean, I could shit on Hogan now just for being a shitty person or just an annoying person and always lying and spewing bullshit, but I could also recognize the fact that he's the biggest star this business has ever produced within the wrestling business. Of course, outside the wrestling business, that would be The Rock. But yeah, there ain't no Hogan in this group. If this group had a Hogan for all of his faults, they'd be in a much better position right now than they are. Son Goshuaku is with us tonight. Do you like MJF better as a heel or a face? Heel. Rizzo, good evening, chat and Solo. Whoever is leaking this crap about Britt Baker needs to be fired from AEW. The show wasn't bad tonight, but more drama than needed with that company. Yeah, I saw her put out a tweet during Dynamite tonight, basically calling out people. I don't know who she was calling out for saying that she cheated on Adam Cole and that's why they're not in a relationship anymore. Because there were rumors going around that they broke up because she cheated on him. I mean, I never talked about it because it just sounded like nonsense. And whether it was true or not, frankly, is nobody's business. But I guess she went off tonight in a tweet. I don't know if it's still up. Whatever. There's always some kind of drama going on with someone connected to this company. Juan Ocampo. Just wanted to say thank you again for being such a cool guy to meet at HOG. After listening to you for 10 years, it was an honor. Charles Mason sucks. Yes, he does. He doesn't just suck. He fucking sucks. But yeah, me and Juan, we were able to meet up at the HOG show in Chicago on Friday. So that was very cool. Today's episode is sponsored by Hims. This goes out to all the guys out there who are listening to this right now. And there are many. It is a pro wrestling audience, after all. Many of you may feel like you are fighting a losing battle in a handicap match with hair loss. Okay, it's not something that people like to talk about. It makes you very self-conscious, and it may be causing you a lot of stress in your day-to-day life. I mean, my father's hair started thinning in his late 20s, so I know this isn't something that's only limited to the older demographic. And you may feel like there's nothing you can really do about it, but that's just not true. Hair loss is a very common problem, more than you may think. And Hims Hair Loss Solutions may be the answer for you. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. And when you do, you could start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient and quality access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from your own home. Hims makes treating hair loss simple. With doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. And you've got choices. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, serum treatments to find what works best for you. Hims makes the process simple and convenient, and it is 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. You don't have to worry about sitting in a waiting room. You don't have to have a whole conversation face-to-face with anybody in person. Super convenient. Just answer a series of questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is then sent directly to you for free. You don't need to worry about insurance, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. So don't waste any more time. If you've got a pen handy, jot down this website, or better yet, type it in right now. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/solomonster. That's hims.com/solomonster for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/solomonster. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information. Hulkling 93. Enjoyed the opening, but if there's one thing I can't stand, it's baby faces being made to hold the idiot ball like Edge during that ending. The idiot ball? She's calling out Conan? Yeah, but is she calling out Conan? Or is she calling out the person who leaked it to Conan? I didn't know that Conan was the one who said that. So apparently I'm learning something new now as well. Apparently, so did he say this on his podcast? Is that what happened here? Because she had a hashtag in that tweet that made it seem like, you know, she wanted that person to reveal their sources or something. I guess, yeah, I guess maybe it was directed at Conan. The Brit tweet is still up for now. It's up for now. That doesn't mean it's going to be up tomorrow or the day after. So take a screenshot of it in case it disappears. Like the Corey Graves tweets, right? Eventually they disappeared. Every time Ray Phoenix tweets, if you don't take a picture of it within 7 minutes, it's going to be gone. He's become the master of the tweet and delete. Sunny Man says, Conan mentioned having a source. His inside sources about the relationship between Britt Baker and Adam Cole. Whatever. Dev to Dust, which two people would you rather spend the day with? Vince McMahon and Vince Russo, or Nancy Grace and Kathy Lee Gifford? You ever see the TV show The Shield? I've talked about it before. It's one of my favorite shows. I don't remember what season it was, but there was an episode, because he's a crooked cop, and there's an episode where he gets two people, might have been two drug dealers, who have been beefing with each other, and he throws them both into like a giant it's like a giant storage locker somewhere in the middle of nowhere, and he locks them in there and he leaves them there overnight. And he goes back, I think, the next day and opens the lock and opens the door. And only one of them walks out. That's what I would like to do with those four. If I could take all four of them and just lock them in a giant shipping container and just padlock the door shut. I probably wouldn't even come back, though. That's the thing. I'm not coming back to open the lock. I'm just going to lock them in there and leave them in there. That's what I would do. I'll hang out with all four, just so I can drive them to wherever the storage locker is and I could lock them in there and never have to see them or hear from them again. Conan sources Ray Phoenix. No. Dev to Dust, which 2014 segment was worse? The Bella Twins, I Wish You Died in the Womb, or Kathy Lee and Hoda with the Rosebuds? The I Wish You Died in the Womb segment. I feel like that dragged on just a little bit longer. And the acting in that segment was just... It was like something out of a porn movie. I mean, you've seen bad acting before. They hand out Razzie Awards for bad acting. It's fucking awful. Speaking of which, we have Give Me Backshot Sala Monster with a $5 super chat. What was or is worse? Bloodline story at whatever you think was its lowest, or this Death Rider angle? I got news for you. The Bloodline story... Look, the Death Rider story sucks, okay? I've established that. I don't know how many different ways I could say this to you. The Death Rider story is fucking garbage, okay? I can't say it any more plainly than that. But... the Bloodline story, okay? That's not that much better. You want to know when the low point is of the Bloodline story? We're at the low point right now. The Bloodline has jumped the shark. And I'm looking forward to Jacob Fatu breaking out on his own. I think once he does that, he's just going to rock it up, and it's going to be so much fun to watch. But the Bloodline story right now, as successful as it's been for them, it really is one of those situations where they just don't want to give it up because they've had so much luck with it and they've filled so much television time with this stuff. And they can spin off new people and they could debut Hikuleo and bring in others. And yeah, they could do that. They could do that for the next 5 years if they want to. But we've already reached the peak of the Bloodline. The peak of the Bloodline was when we were getting those great segments on television every week with Sami Zayn as the honorary Uus. That was the peak of the Bloodline. We're past that. Like, it can still be good sometimes, but it will never be great in the way that it used to be great. This is an angle that jumped the shark a long time ago. And some people may not want to hear that, but that's the truth. And you know it's true. Tell me when I'm telling lies. Let's not pretend that the Bloodline is still this wonderful, great story, okay? It's not. Leopoldo with the $2. Mox is building a damn mystery like Sarah McLachlan. I like that song. It's weird how you can associate certain songs with certain periods in your life. And so when I hear that song, I haven't heard that song in a while, but when I hear that song, I associate it with the year 1998. Which makes me think of the Attitude Era. Same thing with the Goo Goo Dolls. They were pretty popular around that period, right? 98, 99. So when I hear Slide, or some of their other songs, I always associated with that Attitude Era period, because that's what I was listening to. Stuff like that is what was on the radio and what I was listening to at that time. So your brain just goes right back to that time period. Tracking problems. Did you see? I don't pay attention to that stuff. I don't watch the news anymore. Tracking problems. I hope you enjoyed the review. I'm not here to talk about that garbage. Dark Effect with the $50 super chat. Tracking problems. And we got Dark Effect with us tonight. The ultimate tag team. Tracking problems, by the way, is what I have on a lot of my old VHS tapes, because I recorded a lot of those old Attitude Era Raws, and I used to go back and like rewind like the Austin segments. So a lot of those videos that I still have, they have a lot of tracking problems. So it's funny. It's funny that you use that name. Dark Effect says, I've been wondering for a while now, just a purely hypothetical, if Moxley never left WWE, what do you think his place in the Bloodline storyline under the current regime would have been? Would it be similar to Seth? Just picking your brain, thank. Well, obviously, it's impossible to know. If he was still in WWE, I definitely think he would have been looped into this story in some way. He would have been one of those guys to come out and make a cameo in the main event at WrestleMania last year. Seth came out in the Shield gear. When they hit that Shield music, Moxley would have been right there with him. And I'll bet you there were people in that crowd in Philadelphia last year when they heard the music like, oh shit, it can't be Mox. Is Mox coming out? Because you don't realize, like, Seth had made the comment about I'll be your Shield. Like, I wasn't expecting him to come out in the tactical vest and everything. For a brief moment, I wondered, like, nah, it can't be, right? So, like, yeah, he would have totally been looped into this whole thing. He wouldn't be allies with Roman. I think that he would be on the opposing side. But specifically what he would be doing right now, I have no idea. But he would definitely be looped in some way. Groovy Goose with the 33 months. Thanks for the streams. You the man. Thank you, Groovy Goose. Eric the Sean with the 20. Haven't watched AEW in a long while. Has Cody returned home yet? Not yet. Not yet. Something tells me I don't think we're going to be getting a homecoming for Cody in AEW. Bret Hart. Buy, rent, or send to hell on decent to good announcers that can be annoying. Early 90s Vince McMahon, Michael Cole, and Excalibur. Michael Cole is a great announcer, but my God, Michael Cole at his worst was just the most annoying fucking person on the planet. Especially when he was a heel, but he was still the main play-by-play guy. Awful. Awful. Excalibur gets on my nerves too. He just annoys me. Early 90s Vince is just cheesy. He never really annoyed me though. He just got very cheesy. He hammed it up a lot sometimes. But I would say he annoyed me the least. So if I had to send to hell, I mean, that's a little extreme, but I guess I would go Michael Cole and then, nah, fuck it. We'll send Excalibur to hell. And then we'll rent on Cole and we'll buy on Vince. Verbal Souls. The Death Riders remind me of those cringe mall groups that wore tap-out shirts and think they do MMA because they took one class. That's great. That's great. That's a great way of putting it, actually. Well, yes, with Vince, that was one of his classic calls. Like, one, two, he got, no, he didn't. No, he didn't. He always had the three count, like, as a done deal. And then he would, no. One, two, three, he got, no, he didn't. No, he didn't. You know, it's weird. They went through a period in like 93, 94, where there was clearly a directive that went around to the referees that you got to count fast. And it was probably had something to do with, like, we want to increase the pacing of the show. So when you drop down to count, you know, three, or just do a count, count as quickly as possible. Because I remember there was a period of time where you'd have a match and, like, you know, Earl Hebner would drop down or Mike Chioda would drop down, and man, they were counting fast. Like, if you were a wrestler and you weren't paying attention, you had to be careful because you had to be quick on the kick out. And then at some point that stopped. So clearly there was a directive that went out. But that was kind of a thing for a while there with the referees. And then we got a lot of those calls during that period from Vince where he would think it was a three count. And then he would be like, oh, no, two count only. Chris AXC, 2017 to 2018, Marty Scurll was one of the hottest guys in wrestling. If not for his issues, do you think he would have blown up in AEW or potentially WWE? Blown up? No. I think he would have had success, but I never saw him as being anything. Like, if he would have made it to WWE, or if he was going to be a big star in AEW, I never saw him as AEW world champion. I never saw him as a world champion in WWE. You know, I could have seen the villain as an NXT champion, but a world champion, like on main roster, WWE or an AEW? No. Ed Swoggle with the 24 months of membership. Tickets for Dynamite and Collision after Grand Slam in Phoenix, only a month away, have yet to go on sale. This company continues to dumbfound me. They're not even on sale yet. Wow, and we're less than a month away. They should probably get on that. That's pretty bad. Oz and Glorious, yes, I was equating Moxley to Hogan. Moxley carried AEW on his back and still sells a ton of merch. Never seen a Will Hobbs shirt on anyone but Will Hobbs. Well, to get a Will Hobbs shirt on somebody, one must first push Will Hobbs in the way that Jon Moxley has been pushed on TV, and perhaps he'll get over at that level. Yeah, I guess if you look at it that way, Moxley would be kind of their Hogan, but think about how sad that is. It's pretty sad. I don't care how much merch he sells. It's nothing that's making a difference at the level of any of the top guys from those periods in history. Not even close. There's an oasis between them. Like, it's just laughable. Boots, Charles Mason versus Wheeler Yuta in a Texas death match. Could happen one day. I could see him in AEW one day. I'll be more than happy to ship him off there. Oz and Glorious, Desert Island, The Shield, or New York Undercover, The Shield. Arabian Night, buy, sell, rent on who Triple H would want in or back in WWE first. MJF, Adam Cole, or Moxley. Or nostalgia and the Shield stuff. MJF. I think Triple H would, if he had the chance to get his hands on MJF to bring him in, he would do it in a heartbeat. Get a fresh face in there. Somebody who's never been in WWE but could blow up into something so much bigger than what he is right now. So I'm buying on MJF. I'm going to rent on, you know, I know he was Triple H's boy, as you say, in NXT, but I still think he'd want to bring Moxley in. Just objectively, he's a bigger name. So I'd say buy on MJF, rent on Moxley, and sell on Adam Cole. I feel like Cole's stock has really, and the injury had a lot to do with that because he missed so much time, but his stock has really fallen. It's too bad. It's a nice guy, and he's very talented, but his stock has definitely fallen. All right, so where are we on Be the Booker? Did we hit our goal? Did we hit our goal? We are 2 likes off. 2 likes off of Be the Booker. I should point out now, I will be live with you again on Friday night after SmackDown. So we will talk about SmackDown on Friday. I'm going to be at the NYC Arena on Saturday for House of Glory. Ricky Starks is coming back for the second time. And this time, it will be his first time in New York. We had him in Chicago last week. So there will be no Saturday night's main event review. I will be reviewing it most likely on the podcast. I mean, unless our show wraps up super early and I can get home early enough, but I'll probably just save it for the podcast. So that is the schedule for the rest of the week. All right, now we're ready for Be the Booker. Now we are at 430 likes. So that's great. All right, let's do it. Let's see all those B2B emojis. It's time to Be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen,
there's Ricky Starks.
It is now time to Be the Booker.
There's Ricky. As a matter of fact, Ricky is going to be wrestling Charles Mason this Saturday. Seeing all the Charles Mason references. I know who I'll be rooting for. Even though I'm supposed to be unbiased. Leopoldo says, damn, Goo Goo Dolls made me lose my train of thought. Did you forget about the Goo Goo Dolls? Come on, man. Black Balloon was a great song. But not as good as the other song, of course. The one that really blew up. You all know this song. All right, tag team, Be the Booker. We begin here with the Mysterios. We got Rey Mysterio, the deadbeat father with his son, Dominic. Look at Dominic. This is before he was corrupted by Rhea Ripley. Look at that shitty haircut. He looks like a totally different person. No mustache. Terrible haircut. He was a boy before Rhea turned him into a man. Iris, that's right. Iris is a great song, man. Iris is my favorite song of theirs. It's their best song. God, what movie did they use that song in? Was it City of Angels? With Meg Ryan? All right, the Mysterios are going to take on AOPP. Akam and Rezar. Not a good way to start things out. All right, women's Be the Booker. There we go. Your Ring of Honor forever champion. The longest reigning champion of any kind in Ring of Honor history. Athena. Still waiting for her to be worked into things on Dynamite. She'd make a great opponent for Mercedes in that TBS title, I'm just saying. Athena is going to be taking on Tiffany Stratton. We have the WWE Women's Champion. Tiffany was looking good here in this photo. I think this was taken the night that she had her match with Wendy Chu. They had that stipulation match. It was like a hardcore match. I'm pretty sure that's when that photo was taken. That hairstyle, honestly, that the braids works for Tiffany. She should bring that look back. I like that look. What a great fucking match that would be, huh? Tiffany Stratton and Athena. Maze, you're not a fan of the pink braids? I think it looks good on her. Well, to each their own. All right, main event time. We begin with the cleaner, the man himself, the former AEW world champion, Kenny Omega, where he belongs in the main event. We land on Devil's Choice. Keep or replace the man that you just picked. Oh, I'm going to keep Kenny Omega. What do you think I'm going to do? I'm going to get rid of him? We're keeping Kenny. See, that would have been good if I would have landed on, let's say, Vince Russo. Right? I could have replaced him, but... All right, we're going to keep Kenny and we're going to try again. Don't worry, I'm not replacing. Kenny Omega against Kenny Omega. The greatest match in the history of Be the Booker. Kenny Omega will wrestle himself in the main event. And it is better than probably 95% of the main events that I have booked in Be the Booker before. I love it. Now that's a mirror match right there. It doesn't happen very often. But if it's going to happen, that's who you want it to happen with. Kevin says Dave Meltzer just came. How many stars do you think Dave Meltzer would give this match? He would break the scale, right? In the Tokyo, oh my God, in the Tokyo, don't forget about it. Should we add a stipulation to this? A 10-star classic, says Gabe. 10. I think he'd go higher than that. All the stars in the galaxy. I don't want to ruin it. We'll pick a step. Let's add a stipulation to this. What match is Kenny Omega going to have with Kenny Omega? Let's find out. I'll even give it a drum roll. An exploding barbed wire death match. And would you look at who is in the photo? It is Kenny Omega. I shit you not. Kenny Omega for a third time. What is going on tonight? How is this happening? I don't even know what to say. What a terrible finish that was, by the way, to that match. I'll tell you what, though, it's perfect. It's the hat trick. Kenny, and Kenny. And you see him in the barbed wire there with the explosions. We killed Kenny. Well, look, there's no topping that. That's it. That's how you end, man. You go out on a high note. Now we can't do Sonic. It wasn't a clean sweep, but we're going out on a high note there. That's what we're doing. Eminem. AW is going to be here in Huntsville next week for the double taping. Maybe Darby will come out from the rafters. Darby's a little busy right now. Darby will not be there. Jim Cornette's worst nightmare. Kenny Omega versus Kenny. I thought he was warming up to Kenny Omega. Or am I wrong? That's what I thought. Groovy Goose with the $4.99 says, as a fan, it's been nagging me that Punk and MJF's feud never had the third part that AEW set up. Do you think that we will see it in WWE, or would that be a stretch? No, I absolutely think that if MJF goes to WWE in the next, let's say, couple of years, that we'll get it with him and CM Punk one more time. Absolutely. Leopoldo says, Ricky Starks' HOG promo came up on my feed, and it was great. Yeah. Now, you should check out all the other content, especially on the Instagram page. There's some good promos and some good videos to kind of get you up to speed on things. Now, Ricky had a great match, man. For a guy who had, I think, one match on the indies in November, and that's it, going back to last March. He went out there with Mike Santana in Chicago last week, and they had a great fucking main event. Ruined only by the interference of Charles Mason. So now we're getting Mason against Starks this weekend. But he didn't miss a beat. Ricky was great. Leopoldo says, we're going to see Athena on back of a milk carton soon. What do you mean soon? She's been on the milk carton for months. Hey, Victor, what's going on? Hello, Victor. Powerblind, thanks for the stip. You're very welcome. That could have gone very wrong, but we could not have possibly timed that any better. SNK fan has been a channel member for 13 months, says, do you have a finisher that you did not like, but eventually you started to like as time went on? I don't know. I thought I would come around to the red ink that Okada was using, but I fucking hate it. It sucks. A finisher that I didn't like that I warmed up to. Nothing's jumping out of me right now. I usually know pretty quickly. Like, I either like something or I don't. And that's usually the way it stays. Nothing is coming to my mind as far as finishing moves right now. And Leopoldo says, my night's ruined. I don't want the world to see me. Why am I not getting that reference? I feel like I should be getting that reference. I'm not getting that reference. Santino's Cobra? Yeah, I never liked the Cobra. The awkward sharpshooter Cloverleaf. It's like, oh yeah, like the reverse sharpshooter. I always liked that. I always thought that was a cool move. Oh, Iris. Okay. Yes, thank you. He's talking about the song, the Goo Goo Dolls song. Yes. And I don't want the world to see me. Because I don't think that they'd understand. When everything's made to be broken. I just want you to be SNK fan. Be careful. Be calm, see clearly. You got to change your name now. Be calm, see clearly. Says, Charles Mason is a great wrestler. And to be honest, I'm starting to think that Moxley doesn't want to do the job. And I'm a great Moxley fan. It seems selfish. Apparently, he's the one who's the mastermind behind this entire storyline. And Tony Khan is allowing him a lot of leeway. A lot of creative input into how this thing is booked. You would think he would have pulled the plug by now and started pivoting in a different direction and would have taken the reins, but here we are. Leopoldo says, effing Goo Goo Dolls, man, Iris song, don't sing it. Too late. Did you choose all the photos used in Be the Booker? Yes. Took a very long time for me to work on that. Because it's the men's, it's the women's, it's the tag teams, it's the stipulations. I'm even trying to think of new ways, innovative ways to add on to it. I haven't figured out what that is yet. Daniel Shelton, thank you for the five. Was asked a good question today. If Bronson Reed had not been injured in War Games, how would he be working out alongside Solo's Bloodline at this time? No, I don't think they would have continued on with him in the Bloodline. I think that I could envision a situation where Sheamus takes the Intercontinental title from Bron Breakker, like this weekend. It's Saturday night's main event. And they build a Sheamus and Bronson Reed, or Bronson Reed and whoever, if there's a babyface on the other side, and Bronson Reed wins the Intercontinental title at WrestleMania. You know, it just seemed like, okay, the next logical step with him was to get a championship on him. And if he was going to stay on Raw and not be moved in the transfer window, then him winning the IC title at WrestleMania probably would have been, I think, what they would have ended up doing with him. RDS Harry says, hey, brother, another great review as always. I can't wait to see Penta and Gunther mix it up. I think they wrestled each other at least once. I don't know. I don't know if they did. But yeah, I mean, if it happens at some point, I think it'll be a great match. It's a lot of great potential opponents for Penta on that roster. SNK fan, who is your female wrestler crush from the past? Well, she wasn't a wrestler, but I mean, Elizabeth was my first crush. Beyond her, I hate to even say it. She's so disgusting now, but back in the day, you know, Sunny could not be topped. See, it's weird. Like, back in the day, some people were, you know, in the Sunny camp. They were having Sunny days. Other people were in the Sable camp. I was always in the Sunny camp. Sable was, she's a little too enhanced for me. But Sunny, I guess I throw her in there. Trish. You even call it a crush at that point. It was more like an obsession. Tori Wilson. Yes, Tori Wilson was another one. Sunny Man says, I heard Tammy is single now. I thought Tammy had somebody. Had like a boyfriend. Are they no longer together? Is Conan leaking that news that Tammy Sitch is single now? Has she cheated on her boyfriend? Leopoldo says, just sing Chumbawamba and Mambo Number 5 and call it a night. Well, the song is not Chumbawamba. The song is Tub Thumping. Right? Chumbawamba was the band. Tub Thumping was the song. When you get knocked down, but you get up again. And Mambo Number 5, of course, I remember Mambo Number 5, absolutely. So a lot of very memorable songs from that period. Of course, who could forget Aqua, Barbie Girl. Had to listen to that shit on the radio for months on end. Him says, I was always a Mae Young guy. She got you, didn't she, at the Royal Rumble in 2000, right? She showed you more of herself than you ever bargained for, and apparently you liked it. But that's okay. You have a type. Power Spying, I will take Mother Wayne on a coffee date, says Phil. You'll have to fight me for it. Power Spying Games, Mae Young at New Year's Revolution. I was 6 years old, and then I still cringe at the age of 25. Oz and Glorious is Team Dawn Marie over here. Leopoldo, you can sing Ball with the Ball until your heart's content. I've already done my duty. I've already sang that song. I don't plan on ever singing it again. Thankfully, the only people, they weren't the only ones, but the only people in the room that night when that song got sung by me in Las Vegas were JD and Brian Zane, and we're going to leave it that way. That video will never see the light of day. Ken Shamrock's sister. Ryan Shamrock. Ken Shamrock put his foot down when they were pitching the idea of him kind of being romantically linked with his storyline sister. And he said, no, I'm not going to do that. The Attitude Era was wild, and not always in the best of ways. Be calm, see clearly. I think Moxley guilt trips Tony Khan into letting him keep this thing going. It seems weird. It's still going. I love Mox. He's my all-time favorite wrestler, but enough. You see? Look at that. That's a diehard Jon Moxley fan there. Saying the same thing that I've been saying. How much do I miss Katrina's Lick of Death? It was my favorite thing in wrestling there for a while. There were some bad times in wrestling during that period. Maybe that's why I gravitated so much towards Lucha Underground. I needed to latch on to something to maintain my sanity. The Birchalls were not as fortunate. Well, he was going to get his damn incest storyline one way or the other. He almost had one with his own daughter. See, this is what people don't understand. He's been a sick fuck for his whole fucking life. All these weird storylines and shit that we were subjected to. Oh, he's got a sense of humor. He likes toilet humor. No, he's just a fucking weirdo. And instead of seeing a therapist, we were subjected to all of his weird, warped fantasies. Even his own family wasn't safe. Maze says, never forget when you lost yourself over Liv Morgan's Daisy Dukes. I didn't lose. Me? You should go on social media and see the reaction that night. Leopoldo, no more tears or bad songs. And with that, a good night. More lyrics. I'm morbidly curious to be in Vince's brain for 10 seconds. That's 10 seconds too long for me. And be calm, see clearly here. Looks like you're going to get the final word. I'm so serious. I believe Jon Moxley is the greatest wrestler in the world. I'll go to prison to prove it. But tonight, you'll go to prison? He would go to prison to prove how big of a Jon Moxley fan he is. And he still turned the channel off. This has been a very illuminating, this conversation. Let's pick it up on Friday. That's the next time I will be live with you again for the SmackDown review. I will see you guys there. Until then, be well, stay safe. Don't go to prison for Jon Moxley. And I'll see you back here on Friday night for the SmackDown stream. Until then, take care, guys.